Welcome to Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety, gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Welcome everyone to the Gear Garage Live Show. This is a new name for the show. We've been doing this as the Tuesday Q&A show where I answer questions I get during the week, and I decided to make it more than just questions and kind of rebrand it a little bit. And we've been calling it the live show anyway. So it's just the Gear Garage Live Show. And you'll see the new intro. And yeah, it's a new thing. We're still answering questions. And that's sort of still the bulk of the show. So if you have questions throughout the week, you can submit them at Whitewater Guidebook. Same as normal. But I may add things. I may add other topics. I may delve into other things as part of the show. We'll see. You may be listening to this as a podcast. And it's not meant as a podcast, but we have it as a podcast through the website. And you can find it. You should be able to find it as Gear Garage Live Show in Spotify, iTunes, all the things. I think it works. But it's really meant as a video podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining. I'm going to answer some questions as normal. If you have more questions to add, just go to the comment section and add a question in there, and I will get to it eventually. I also really appreciate help. I do not know the answers to everything. And I know some partial answers, but it really helps to get answers from those of you watching the show. So please go in the comments, add your thoughts. It really helps a lot. With that, let's get started. We have a lot of questions. We've realized our spam filter has been filtering out certain questions based on there being links in them or just spam noteworthy things. And people have been spamming us through our contact form, so that makes our contact form look like spam to the email. We think we fixed it. We found a bunch of old questions, and so we're going to catch up and get to those. This is going to be kind of a long show, I think. There's a lot of questions, but hopefully they haven't gotten we found all the ones that went to spam filter. If you send us a question through the form and we haven't gotten to it, let us know. But here we go. The first one. Thinking about putting a floor valve along the left side centered in the middle of my new Moravia. Thoughts or advice? Floor valve along the left side centered in the middle. Is this asking like the middle of the raft? So like where you're rowing, left side centered in the middle. So it sounds like what you want to do, like usually we put the floor valve in the very front or the very back, you want to put it in the middle. I've never heard of this. My first thought is it's not normal. So I don't like it. My first thought is always like, oh, that's not a normal thing. I'm against it. Left side. Why the left side? That's interesting. Either it could be on the right side, couldn't it? But left side. I'll give you my opinion about floor valve placement. I like my floor valves in the bow of the boat, because when I'm in camp, the bow of the boat is closest to shore. So I can get a pump on shore. If I need to top off the floor, put it in the thing and pump it up. I know people don't like floor valves there because people step on it, which is, I've never had a problem with. If you leave your floor cap on, it should be fine. Or other reasons they don't want to. I like mine in my bow. If you have in the stern, if it's a gear boat, it's sometimes hard to get to because there's bags and stuff back there. In your center area, you're saying where your feet go, a lot of people hang a deck there. So if you hang a deck there that you stand on, that wouldn't work. But if it's just open, you need a floor valve there. I mean, sure. I guess I don't see a problem with it. It's really interesting. I think if you ever went to sell the boat, somebody might have some concerns. So if this you're buying this boat, it's your boat forever, you're never going to sell it. I wouldn't buy a boat with the floor valve. Like I wouldn't buy a used boat. I don't really want the valve there. But if this is your boat for the next 30 years, you're never going to sell it, you're not worried about it, you're like, I don't care. Then, yeah, I don't know. Do it. Kind of curious how it goes. Let's get some comments here. Ooh, gear, yeah. Woo, we're on. Okay. Do you have a video or formula setting the oar mounts correct distance from your seat? That's so funny. I just set up an oar boat last night, and I just did this, and I forgot what the answer is. I think I put them because I did. I just set up an orbit last night. I think I put them about right before my knees. That's all I have for you. I've had them far forward, far back, all over the wrong place. I think they're just sort of like around where your knees are. When I set this one up last night, I made it a little bit closer than my knees. So if anybody else has any thoughts, let us know. Okay. Next question. Accident on the Rogue. In light of the recent accident on the Rogue that was reported on AW, I'm hoping Zach will discuss ideas on how to mitigate entrapment risks in and out of a boat. Sorry, I'm going to question. I know there are Gear Garage vids that address this, but I'm thinking that all of us could probably use some reminders on how to keep safe out there. Thank you, Chris. So it's always hard to talk about fatalities because we weren't there, and they're fatalities. I'm going to look up the American Whitewater database, see what it said. I have information about what happened, but information is always secondhand, thirdhand. I don't know if it's true or not, and I really don't want to spread misinformation about the accident that happened. And so let's look at this. Let's go off the basic information in the American Whitewater Accident Database. So there's this database. Some of you may or may not know about it, that keeps accidents. And I look back to it a lot. And for me, for river safety, I'm just fanatical about not drinking, wearing a PFD, don't boat by yourself, dress for the conditions. That just cuts out most accidents. And if you look at this pretty regularly, you're going to see a lot of those things here. Cold water, PFD not worn. And again, I haven't looked at this. I'm just telling you the things you see over and over. PFD not worn. Foot entrapment. That's that one. We'll get to that one. Poor seam management, inexperience, raft, low head dam. We just shouldn't be running low head dams. Flush drowning, which just means flush drowning is just like they don't know. The person just went downstream and died. We don't have the cause of death. Low head dam. Jeez. PFD not worn, PFD not worn, PFD not worn. Equipment trap, I haven't looked at this one. Maybe they got caught on something. Strainer, PFD not worn. Yeah, if this was springtime, it would be a lot more cold weather. There's typically a lot more solo boats. Oh, here we go, solo paddling. People are dying because of solo boats. The boating by yourself doesn't cause a death, but it's a factor in a lot of fatalities. So let's look at the information on this one. On the Rogue and see what we can based on. And there's always, when you look at these, you can click and see and learn more. Oh wait, that's Shears Falls. That's not the same one. Here we go. Reed, Rogue River, Wildcat Rapid, 11 people, fire rafts. So wow, there's a lot of info here. So Wildcat is technically classified as class 3. Yeah, low water, man. It's hard to call a class 3. It's like we shall know rapids change based on water levels. And I think what gets us into trouble boating a lot is we memorize lines and we always do the same line. We don't learn to boat. We just memorize lines. And I think learning how to boat and make your own decisions is important. But at low water, it's different than medium water. One issue I found is the book is a little deceiving. What is the book? There's probably the Matt Lattiker book or one of the books saying that people can either run right or left of the island, run either side of the island. But the left side gets tricky for boaters at certain flows. Yep. This boat had run left of the island. I'm not sure which island you're talking about. There's the big island where there's a left channel and a right channel. And then there's the rocks down there. Is it that island? I don't know. I'm a little confused by this. But there's a drowning. The man slipped out of the boat during their attempts to get unstuck. He being sucked down in the sieve and his nephew is trying to keep him above water. Oh, geez. They were able to place an oar across the two rocks to create the sieve and the man was able to haul it on for a while. Yeah, that's not good. The body of the deceased was stuck in the rapid. So from what I can tell from this accident description that I'm reading here, and I'm just going off the description. I don't know. We don't know what actually happened. Like I don't know what occurred, so it's hard to speculate too much. But from what I can take He got stuck in that rock pile in the middle of Wildcat that a lot of people are getting stuck in. And they spent time getting the boat off. And during that, he slipped and fell in the water and then got pinned in a sieve and died. So the question here is, discuss some ideas how to mitigate entrapment risks in and out of the boat. Mitigating it. So stay in the boat. I think we can mitigate a lot of risks by us staying in the boat and not getting stuck. I mean, not getting stuck to begin with. If you fell in the river, that could be one of a few things. It could be a physical fitness thing, just not able to like stand and be physically fit on rocks. I don't know if that was the thing. I'm just saying it could be like we need to be agile and fit. Could be not having a proper footwear. You know, on the Rogue, I see a lot of people wearing flip-flops or no shoes. I mean, having good shoes that stick to rock, I think, is an important part of the gear we wear. So even though, like, you know, you might be like some class 5 boater, but you're on a class 3 river, if you're wearing flip-flops, that's great if everything's going great. But as soon as you're part of a rescue, the flip-flops are inadequate and it could cause falling into the boat. So and I would say, I mean, avoid getting stuck to begin with. I'm gonna claim that you're probably not going to get super stuck at Wildcat if you pull that move. If you are a pusher and you push all your moves and you turn your boat and try to push a move, you are sideways those rocks when you hit it. If you try to pull away from it, you hit it with your bow and you typically spin off. You don't get wrapped. And so a lot of these, and this is just from experience, a lot of these times people get stuck in Wildcat is because they're trying to push that move. And so why I'm such an advocate for like learning how to pole, because you can make the move better. So step one is make the move. I think step two is wear good shoes, like wear and be physically fit so you can walk around on rocks. And then also your PFD, it sounds like he swam. And flotation maybe could have helped. So if you want to mitigate the risk of getting stuck in sieves, first of all, don't swim. Don't fall out of your boat. Don't get in a situation where you swim. But if you do swim, being higher above the water is probably going to keep you safer than lower in the water. And so having a high flotation PFD, like one of those NRS guide vests with 22 pounds or more, just, and if you're a big person, bigger, right? Like I'm 220 pounds. I should not be wearing the same PFD that somebody that's designed for somebody that's 140. And so if I want to mitigate the risk personally as a bigger person, I need more flotation to keep my body higher. So I'm less likely to get stuck in rocks under there. So hopefully does that answer the question. Discuss ideas to mitigate entrapment risks in and out of the boat. So, I mean, mitigating risks in the boat, entrapment risks, you know, don't have like, follow the clean land principle. Don't have like carabiners all over and things get stuck on as a person for sure. Don't get pinned. And so I'm going to say pull, do more pulling strokes when you're rowing. And so if you do hit rocks, you hit them with your bow and then out of the boat, heavy flotation, better shoes so you don't slip on rocks. Hopefully it's hard to say. Keep your feet up out of the water when you swim. I think we all know that. But who knows how he fell out here. So hopefully that helps. Yeah. There may not be a Gear Garage videos that address this. Yes, ma'am. So hopefully... Yeah, it's really sad. This one bums me out a lot. They all bum me out, but this one bums me out a lot. Okay, let's move on because this is just gonna be sad. Jay, I use 10 inches in front of the seat to the center of the oarlocks. Yeah, cool. That doesn't seem like it's enough, but that's just a guess. I have no idea. Jay's the man. Jay would know. One thing too, going to oarlock placement. I make myself big here. If you're having a hard time shipping because you can't get your oars past your PFD, that might be a reason to move them more forward. so you can actually get your ore by your body. And so you, if you have the ability to move them forward a little bit, that'll help you ship, especially on Tentacle Rivers. I was on a Tentacle River this morning, and I was constantly shipping and moving the ores back and forth. And if I was kept hitting my PFD, it would have been a problem. So having them forward will help keep you from hitting them on your PFD. Okay, next question. When adding a trailer frame to an ore rig, how do you strap down the trailer frame? What's a trailer frame? Wait, how do you, when adding a trailer frame to an ore rig, how do you strap down the trailer frame? Mostly inquiring where to put the trailer frame abuts the ore frame. And pictures I've seen, it looks like people use one strap, which goes the main frame, trailer frame, and D-ring. Okay, let me understand this. I'm guessing a trailer frame, we call it a hatch, and it goes in the front. So we have our like raft frame and the separate little hatch that we put things in and cover with a table. So I'm just going to assume you're talking about what we call a hatch. I don't know what a trailer frame is. And I'm guessing by the name trailer frame, it goes behind in your setup, but I'm not sure. How do you strap down the trailer frame? Where the trailer frame, but I think it, it just goes straight up next to this ore frame. They're just side by side. The tubes are like boom, boom, hitting each other. The pictures I've seen, it looks like people use one strap, which goes to the main frame trailer frame. Yeah, one strap. That's what I do. I don't have one here to demonstrate, but I just like put it through the, again, we call it the hatch. Put it through the frame, put it through the hatch, put it down to a D-ring, cinch it tight. It's great. I sometimes, if I'm on like a really hard river, like a class, like the Illinois or something, if I'm on the Rogue, I might just quickly throw a strap on, tie it down. I probably should rig the flip all the time. I think just a quick strap is, it could shift a little bit. So I'll take it and I'll do a wrap around them together. So where the trick, where the, how do I show this? There's like the two, how do I demonstrate this? I don't know. There's like, maybe here, there's like the two tubes. I will just wrap it an extra time around to just really get it tight and then go down to the D-ring. So I use a lot of extra wraps for friction when I want things to be bomber. Okay, moving on. Downstream more. Here we go. Man, I saw some downstream more issues today. Okay. Don't use your downstream ore. Do not use your downstream ore. Yeah, don't use your downstream ore. Great advice. I've heard this many times, but when asked how not to use it, I got crickets. Yeah, it's simple. Don't use it. Just don't use it. If you're sideways to the river, do not use it. It's not that hard. If you're sideways to the river, first of all, don't get sideways, right? And if you are, just try to use your upstream ore. You can still move the boat with one ore. Okay. So I have been working on it. Below is what I figured out. I was interested in other opinions. Feel free to skip my example and just explain your technique. In this example, I'm floating 90 degrees of the current in shallow water with my bow facing river right, and I need to move my boat to the right to avoid some kind of obstacle. Okay, so I'm gonna go to the, I guess there's more on the next page. I will turn my boat 90 degrees of the current, and I will pull on both oars, which means using my downstream oar. If the river is a big, deep river, Grand Canyon, high water Middle Fork, high water Row, or if I just know it's deep, I will pull on both oars. It's a thing I will do, and it's a technique I use if I need to get to shore. But as soon as you say shallow water, I won't do it. I will get some sort of angle to the river, probably 45 degrees-ish, so that that oar is not totally downstream, and I'll use a ferry to cross. All right, let me move on, because I feel like I know where this is going. Hold on. So in shallow water, my bow-facing river right, I need to move my boat to the right to avoid some sort of obstacle. Yeah, so I'm going to say in shallow water, I'm going to get about 45 degrees, and I'm going to ferry so that oar is – that. It's not like if I'm like 60 degrees, that oar could hit a rock and hit me and hurt me. And so I want like 45 degrees ish. And going to the very top, don't use your downstream oar. Do not use your downstream oar. We have to have this mantra because people do it all the time. I saw somebody do it today who should be better, who should know better. So it's a great way to get hurt. I mean, you take that oar, put it in a rock, hit it in your head. It's a great way to get hurt. Or it goes in a rock, the raft goes over, it breaks the oar violently. I've seen boats wrap on or downstream oars to get stuck. You have to have awesome downstream oar management. It is a fundamental part of rowing. And you can't once in a while do it until you're really, 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 really good. Until you can if I am doing it, I am watching it and I am really careful skimming the top of the water. But when people are learning, I see them all the time. Their first five seasons, not learning, learning through doing it for a long time. They keep hitting their downstream oar on stuff over and over and over. And again, it's either going to break an oar or hurt you or hurt somebody in your boat. And so the reason it's a mantra is just, I'd rather have people just don't do it. I would rather have you get stuck, miss the move. I don't need to see any more broken oars or broken people. So that's a mantra. Do not use it. Just don't do it. Get it out of your head. Learn how to boat without your downstream oar. Sorry to be on such a rant, but just don't use it. And then someday when you're really good, and I mean really far from now, maybe once in a while you can use good judgment. When that is, I have no idea. But I see it so much. People trying to use their downstream oar and they don't understand how dangerous it is and causing problems. And so I'm going to say just don't use it. Okay. With the water being shallow, I don't want to use, yeah, good. Using my upstream oar, I slightly pull back, causing the stern of the boat to catch the current a little more than the bow, putting me around 80 degrees of the current. Now I'm able to push with my upstream oar to ferry across the river. I have to pay attention. I don't push so hard that I change the angle of my boat. Okay, wait. The water is so, hold on. I'm confused here. I'm floating 90 degrees of the current in shallow water. My bow is facing to the right, and I need to get to the right. Oh, well, here's the problem. Have your bow face to the left and pull over at 45 degrees. You're not doing this on a push. This is the whole thing. Why are you pushing this move? And so if it's a hard move, and I would be pulling that move if it's a difficult move. Okay, so let's go back to this. Use my upstream oar. So they're trying to push it. Use my upstream oar. They're facing to the right. I thought they were facing the right, trying to get right. Hold on. Sorry, this is confusing me, everybody. I'm a little slow. Okay, in this example, I'm 49 degrees of the current shallow water. My bow facing river right. And then you need to move to the right. Okay. And again, my answer is turn your bow to the left and pull to the right. Ferry over, go slower than the current. Make the maneuver that way. That's my answer. So they're pointing to the right, trying to get to the right. And in that case, their upstream oar, okay, is the right oar. I slightly pull back, causing the stern of the boat to catch current a little more than the bow, putting me about 98 degrees of the current. 80 star, best point degrees. Now I'm able to push with my upstream oar. Nope, that's not going to work. I have to pay attention that I don't push so hard that I change the angle of my boat, which is really hard to do. If I mess up the angle, it can always be adjusted using the upstream oar. Yeah, this works pushing or pulling like most moves. The earlier you can set up, the better. On a side note, what do you think? Jesus. Okay, so we'll get to your last question in a second. So I think you're too push happy. So to answer your question, how do you avoid user downstream oar? You don't use it. You just don't use it. Just don't. You figure it out. And if you can't, get stuck and push your boat off. Just don't. And develop this insane habit of not using it. And if you're sideways the current, turn that boat. If you need to make an aggressive move from the left to the right, you need to pull on the oars. Turn your bow to the left and pull your boat to the right. And you're going to be about 45 degrees of the current maybe, and your oar is a little bit downstreamy, but it's not bad, right? And do it that way. But you're going to have a hard time pushing this move and keeping your angle with one oar. It's going to be really hard to do. Hopefully I have this question. Hopefully that makes sense. Use of the downstream is often necessary. Take shallow strokes and stroke in the crest of the wave, not the trough. Yeah, I mean, Jay, I'm going to say That's what ballers do. And I don't mean like you've been doing three trips a year for 10 years. You're not a baller. This is people who have thousands and thousands of river miles behind them. You have the ability to take shallow strokes and stroke in the crest of the waves, which that's true. You just hit the tips of the waves. You get better at using the top of the water, but it is so advanced and takes so many miles to get there. I don't think I would disagree with use of the downstream more as often necessary. I don't agree with that. I think you can avoid using your downstream more unless until you're getting into the harder stuff. You don't need to use it. Just figure it out. And that's why this whole, I got to push everything. When you push, you create this, you have to get a pretty aggressive angle. You get this like downstream oar problem that you're pushing like this. And so when you put it in, that's when it hits the oar and hits you in the face. When you're pulling, the oars are like here, and that downstream oar, that kind of downstream oar isn't a problem. So I'm going to urge you to focus less on pushing too. Okay. That felt like me ranting a lot, but I'm so adamant. Hopefully you'll get this. Just don't use your downstream more. Just don't use it. And if you need to make a move, don't make a move by pushing. Make a move by pulling technique or do a downstream ferry, which works really well too. Okay, moving on. Hey, Zach, I've been a follower of Gear Garage for a long time. Awesome. Thank you. I really enjoy your content. Thank you for saying that because, you know, a handful of people tell me I'm a moron. And so it's really good to get good feedback once in a while. I really enjoy your content, live shows, and all the other stuff. I feel like you're buttering me up to say something bad, actually. I have a comment or maybe a content idea for discussion. In one of your recent Gear Garage live question shows, you made a comment within one of the questions about certification. I really like the idea of what you said with regards to the idea of what it means to be certified. I believe the person asking the question deemed themselves to be Swiftwater certified, and their response was detailing they actually just received a certificate for completing the course. Yeah, I remember that. Yep. I'm actually working on a presentation right now about certifications and training for a conference. And so this is fresh in my mind right now. I'm certainly not an expert or certified in any modality of whitewater, but I definitely do agree with you on the statement. Over the past years, I have taken several rowing and swiftwater rescue courses, but I've never actually been part of a real life rescue situation. Hopefully partially due to the risk evaluation process I learned in these courses. That's awesome. That's awesome. Going back to what stuck out to me from the question on the show was the person's inherent or at least seemingly inherent willingness to take risk because they were indeed rescue trained. Certainly there are different degrees of this with regards to each individual and their own experience level. Is this a question or just a comment? Okay, got it. Where it piqued my interest for discussion was the part where they're asking the question, if it was okay because they're Swiftwater certified. If I remember right, the person asking the question, their son-in-law wanted to wear waders on a trip and he said he was Swiftwater certified and it can't, something like that. He said, no, you can't. I know what I'm talking about. I'm Swiftwater certified. If somebody remembers what it was, let me know. Okay, wait, it was okay because they're Swiftwater certified. My thoughts were, okay, then why are you asking the question if you already know it's dangerous? Which leads to believe there's a possible disconnect between this idea of what is certified. How potentially just taking a class gives someone a false impression of qualification? Hope this is somewhat clear to what I'm trying to say. Thanks for your time to read this, Ben. Yeah, Ben, thanks for the comment. I mean, I think what happens is, I'm trying to think of how to say this without annoying a bunch of people. I think there are people who've taken a lot of classes and have a lot of information, have participated in a lot of classes and have a bunch of certifications by their name, whether they're certifications or not, a lot of these are just participation awards. I did a guide school. I did a rescue class. I did this. I did that. I'm certified. And they like, you know, you see it sometimes in their email signature for like some guides, like so-and-so river guide and like all their certifications. Like I'm Leave No Trace master educator. I'm this, I'm that. And I feel like there's some people have too much certification, not enough experience. And some people have a lot of experience without training. And that may not be good either. I think there's a happy medium. And so I think some people think because they've taken a class, they have better knowledge or judgment than somebody else. And that's not always the case. It depends on the class. And as I'm doing my research for this presentation I'm doing, there's a lot of really bad classes out there. There's no, for Swiftwater Rescue in general, in particular, there's no authority up there that's like, this is what a class has to be about. This is what a certification is. All these businesses offering rescue classes, they just made their certifications up. I mean, they don't, there's no agency that's like, this is what a class has to have. Like, they're doing a good job. I mean, I know Sierra Rescue in particular, Swiftwater Safety Institute in particular, American Canoe Association, as long as your instructor is good, it's a great class. There's not like, and I say that because they're not across the board all great instructors. And so, whereas like Sierra Rescue and SSI, I feel like have a higher top level quality of instructors. Now, I'm not bad mouthing ACA. I'm just saying, like, if you take an ACA class, they're very instructor dependent. So I think sometimes people have an inflated sense of value based on the classes they've taken. And that happens when they have to say, I've taken all these, like, I feel like it comes out when they're like, well, I am a Swiftwater level 4, so you should all listen to me. And then there's some guy who's like led expeditions all over the world, they're quiet, who doesn't has to posture like that. And so for me, when I see somebody posture like that based on their education, I'm always a little dubious. Like, I'd rather make my own decision on somebody's ability levels based on their ability levels and their judgment that they make and what they do. I'm going to make a decision on who I trust to make decisions based on what they're actually doing instead of some classes they participated in. Now, some classes, so like I've taken woofer classes, but I'm not going to go around saying, hey, I'm the woofer, listen to me. Because I know there's people out there that are doctors and nurses and ski patrollers who do this all the time. I just have participated in a class and like learned some stuff, and I'm kind of useful. But if anything actually bad happens, I want that person who has the training and the experience to come in on a medical thing. Same thing with rescue. Like, I feel like if you've taken a rescue class, you've learned some things. You've been told some things by a person that may or may not be correct, because there are some rescue classes out there teaching stuff that's a little dubious. But if I'm with a class 5 kayaker who has been out there and seen stuff go wrong and done this stuff and made mistakes and learned from it and gotten feedback and talked about it and debriefed, even if they haven't taken a class, I'm going to trust that person probably. So hopefully that's not too much of a rant. Here's some comments about this. Paper tigers in IT industry. Yeah. Trained, certified, qualified, and competent are all separate with different definitions. Trained, certified, qualified, competent. Yeah. Knowledge plus experience is wisdom. You need the experience along with knowledge, colossal knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody, I have to say, like, I've taken a lot of classes. Like, I mean, not a ton, but I've taken some. I'm somebody who's way more on the experience side than the classes side. Like, I haven't taken, when I started guiding, I was all experience, almost no classes. And over the years, I've taken a few rescue classes. I've taken IRF courses. I've taken first aid classes. And I try to develop myself and get better through like reading books and learning and like reading about, you're just right here. I was just the other day thinking about, I've been thinking about vector poles a lot. I'm trying to like get better, understand vector poles even more and more. And so I have, this River Rescue book, Franco Ferraro's book, and then the Knowles Rescue Guide, three great rescue books that I'm using as a reference to try to like come through some complex thoughts on vector poles. And so I feel like self-education is as valuable, more valuable. I don't know. So let's go back to the question. Sorry, I probably like went on a rant, separate thing here. So certainly there are different degrees with this in regards to each individual and experience level. Okay, so the thing was, my thoughts were, okay, then why are you asking the question if you already know it's dangerous, which leads to believe there is a possible disconnect between this idea of what is certified, how potentially just taking a class gives someone a false impression. Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. And so like our rowing schools that we teach, the class 3 rowing school and the class 4 rowing schools, there's no paper that you get that says you're class 3 certified. And sometimes in class 4 schools, we'll say like, just because you took a class 4 school doesn't mean you should go run class 4. You've learned some things. We're not saying you're ready for class 4. We're just helping you develop skills to run that type of river. But nobody gets a stamp card that says you're ready to go run those rivers after that. And if you do a class 3 rowing school, we're not saying you're ready to do class 3. We're just like, come to this course, learn some things. We're going to share knowledge. We're going to get better. But there's no card that says you can go do these things. So yeah, I think hopefully Ben, I think we're thinking the same thing. Competent is someone who's trained and experienced enough that they can do the task with minimal supervision. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Let's move on this one. I feel like that's a bunch of verbal diarrhea. I did a bad job of on that one. Okay, let's do better on this one. Cold Gates of Lodore. I'm running Gates of Lodore this weekend. Whoa. Hopefully this is one of the ones we lost in spam and it was September, not October. The average high temperature around 40 and the average low is 20. That's cold. I have a dry suit, but I'm still worried I might be miserable with all the layers. What tips do you have for keeping warm on a cold multi-day like this? Gates of Lodore, first of all, you don't want to swim. You don't really want to have a wrap or a flip. You want an accident-free trip. Now, accidents can happen, but you do not want to go on this trip with a bunch of people that don't know what they're doing. If there's a chance of a flip or a wrap or like an accident, you just can't manage it when it's that cold. You can, but it's brutal. And so you need to make sure everybody is a solid, like ability level and a half above Gates of Lodore. Like these are class 4 boaters. Nobody should be being challenged in Lodore. There should be nobody there that's like, well, you know, I did the Rogue last week and I'm going to, you know, for the first time now I'm going to do Lodore. You don't want to make mistakes. Having an accident when it's cold is really hard. With a dry suit, I mean, it depends on you. You can definitely handle temperatures that low. It's the sitting there that is crushing. So whoever's rowing is going to be fine because they're rowing, they're moving their body. If you're just sitting in a raft, it's pretty miserable. So it depends what you're doing. So tips would be like move, row, be active. Camp is brutal. I would protect your dry suit and make sure it doesn't get wet inside. At night, I would dry it out. All your inside layers, I would have several of them. So you don't want to be putting on wet stuff in the morning for sure. And so protect your dry suit. And then if you get cold, there's those little hand warmer things you can buy that you like crack open. Those will actually work pretty well. Put those in your feet. That's what they're called. They're made for skiing. I think they're just little pocket warmers. I mean, having those for your feet are what get cold. My feet are what get cold. A lot of people. So if you at least have warm feet, things aren't bad. But if you're just going to be sitting in a boat, that's going to be brutal. That's going to be cold. All right. Hopefully that helped. Hey, Zach, the topic here is palm gear in the U.S. I bought my first waist throw bag this past season, a River Station Rapid Pack. And sadly, I was not super happy with the specs. I've been looking for something with a wider mouth for easier stuffing and a thicker diameter rope to make it a bit nicer to grab for lining boats and rescues. After searching for a while, I found that I was looking in for Palm's 20-meter pro throw line paired with their quick pro belt. Let's look at this thing. Let's find this thing. Look, this was the Palm. Oh, man, I already lost where I was. Let's go back. 20-meter pro throw line. 20-meter pro. Look at that. Boom. Line. Yeah, this is a pretty sweet throw bag. Paul makes great stuff. There's some great stuff here. And there's a 20-meter. Yeah, just big wide open mouth. I love this. Oh, sorry. I have the question up still. This is the palm 20 meter throw line. I love how they have webbing down here, right here. Big wide open mouth, good rope. Which rope is this? Does it show? 11 millimeter rope. That's pretty big rope. Is it really 11 millimeter? That's a pretty beefy rope for a throw bag. Yeah, it's like colorful. It's Paul makes good stuff. So let's go back. Wide mouth, either stuffing and thicker line, but after searching, I found, yep, the quick pro belt. I don't personally like these as waist belts. And this is a topic of discussion because Cody, and for those of you that know Cody, his YouTube channel is Private Whitewater. If you did, oh, there he is right there. Boom. Cody, good timing. We went boating this morning. Are you already home, Cody? Yeah, this is a debate for Cody and I. I just don't think this is a great throw bag. I mean, as a throw bag, it's great. As a waist belt, it's just floppy. And Cody, even today, why yours is just floppy. I know you think I'm wrong. I know you think I'm an idiot. I'm cool. This is gonna be a long contentious thing we have between us. I think as a throw bag, this is great. If I had it in my kayak, had it in my raft, I'm in. As a waist belt, I just think they're floppy. So do I have one of my throw bags here? I'm going to promote really quickly. And then Cody, you can come in and set me straight. Like when you get to this, I'm going to promote. Let's go back to here. The throw bags I think are really good. WWTC throw bags. These are also made in Europe. I import them and sell them. Oh, here's one right here. Cody, you're going to have to listen to me talk and you're going to disagree with me. Here's one right here. I think these are just as a waist belt. It just has a nice, like, big flat spot against your back. I feel like those other ones have a narrow spot against your back, so they're floppy up and down. These stay tight against your back, and it's got a big wide opening. So I'm over here. When you undo this, it's a pretty similar thing, but a big wide opening here to pack it, and solid rope. So. This is just really good rope. And I sell them. So this is the website that I sell things on. I'm sold out of the 20 meters right now, and I'm sold out of the 18 meters, but I'm getting a shipment this week, hopefully before I leave for a couple of weeks. So they should be in stock here real quick. If you're going to ask me what throw bag to get and you want a waist belt, I'm going to unequivocally say this one without a doubt in my mind, no matter what Cody's trying to sell you. And the funny thing is Cody's not trying to sell you anything. I'm trying to sell you something. Like I'm actually selling these, but I think these are superior. So I would say I would get one of these. All right, back to the question because I probably am missing the point of the question. I keep going on random rants. Here we go. So the Palm 20 meter pro throw line paired with quick belt. Yep. Cody's stoked. You found the one he thinks is the best. And I think is good. I just not as a waist belt. I've had a hard time finding a domestic retailer or an overseas retailer that will ship to me in California. Yeah, I mean, they're made in the UK. They're sold in the UK. You just can't get Palm stuff here in the US. Actually, I have another thing by Palm. I really want to hear Cody's thoughts. Cody, please chime in. And while we're doing this, if you're sitting at home, go to YouTube, go to Private Whitewater and subscribe. Cody has like 360-some subscribers. Let's get him to 1,000. So please subscribe to Cody's channel. He has great information designed for private boaters specifically. Okay, so how do I make myself bigger? Okay, so this is another Palm product that I love. It's a sling. Like the one I'm suggesting people carry is one made for climbing, and it's a little smaller than this, but this one is really nice. And it's a Palm product. This is something you would carry as a flip line to do anchors. It's a little, again, bulkier than the one that I usually suggest people get, but I'm really digging this one. Sewn and it's rated, which I don't know. But this is really nice. Two sewn loops, but you can't buy in the US. They make all kinds. Oh, here, I have this. Also, I just got this Palm PFD. I think it's the FXR. Great PFD. I wouldn't get it for rafting, but I get it for kayaking. Great PFD. So back to here. So how I get my gear from Palm from Europe. So either like I got this one in Iceland, the Palm PFD, the sling, my friend Mark, I can't find it now. My friend Mark brought me over when he came from Europe. And then another PFD I have that I really like for rafting, the Palm Nevis. He brought me over from Europe. So you really can't get it here in the US. And I think part of the reason might be that there's just really high tariffs. I don't know for sure, but you just can't get it. And so if they ship something from the UK, like I just got some of these throw bags. They were supposed to be coming Wednesday, but they just keep getting caught in customs based on some paperwork that they need, some reseller certificate. It is a massive, massive undertaking to get a shipment of these throw bags from Europe. It's not easy. So seeing the Palm, it's just really difficult to get the stuff. It's already really expensive because it's, you know, in the UK. If once you add on all the cost, it's going to be prohibitively expensive. So to answer your question here, I don't think go to Europe. I mean, that's it. I can't think of anywhere in the US. Cody, you did buy that throw bag, so you have some insight here, and I'm sitting here waiting for your insight, unless you're driving back from boating right now and you probably shouldn't be texting. Thanks. Your channel has been a big part of fueling my passion for whitewater over the past few years. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks. I appreciate the good feedback. It's not always positive, so it's good to hear the positive stuff. All right, here we go. That's it. That's all the questions. So, wow, we did it. I think that's it for the show, unless anybody has any last minute questions, things to add. Cody's saying cheap shipping. Cody, help us out. Where? How? Where does he get it? I'll tell you what. Go to Private Whitewater. I bet Cody has a video. Come on, Cody, you got to have a video. I'm going to go there right now for you. See if I can find it. YouTube and Private Whitewater. So for those of you who don't know, again, like here's, I'm going to bring up Cody's channel, Private Whitewater. Cool logo. He's making hats soon. And so he has 387 subscribers. Come on, right now, there's 35 people watching. We can get this to 400. I know we can get this to 400. Please. He probably has a video about that throw bag. And if you don't, Cody, I'm very disappointed. Gear reviews. Here we go. Palm Bolt throw bag right here. Here is Cody talking about it. And maybe he even says where to get it. I don't know. Maybe in the video he says where to get it. Cody, do you say where to get it? I don't know. Magnetic closure, belt loops. So I know Cody did find it somewhere here in the US. Here we go. Comment above. Water sports outlet. Okay. Palm throw bag water sports outlet. And please take a second, subscribe. Oh man, look at this. Oh, right here. This is the thing too. It was $60. This is also like, it's really hard to beat. I mean, these throw bags I'm selling, I think they're like 170, 80. They're expensive. They're not cheap. I don't know how these are so inexpensive, but this is the answer to your question. Just go to just Google Water Sports Outlet, Palm throw bag. This is it. I mean, $60 is for any throw bag is a great price. And I mean, there's all kinds of stuff here. Here's the other one. We're looking at the 15 meter. I don't see the waist belt here, but I'm guessing it's here somewhere. So they must get a lot of like Palm's old stuff and then send it. Thanks, Cody. All right. Well, that's the end of this show. Thank you all for watching, for being supportive. Once you're done liking and subscribing Cody's channel, you could also like and subscribe this channel if you wanted to. If not, no big deal. I'm headed out overseas on Sunday. I'm going to try to do a show next Tuesday. We might move the dates around a little bit while I'm gone. We'll see. But I'll try to keep weekly show going. And yep, that's it for this episode. See you all next week.